Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Niler 9 podcast. It is myself, Niler 9, and Andrea Cleary is back. Hello.
Hello. The prodigal podcast host returns from her journey. Why are they speaking in third person? Hello, Niall.
That's okay.
How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back. Spring has sprung, and you spent some time in India since we last talked to you.
I did.
Yeah, how are you getting on? How was it?
It was amazing. It was absolutely incredible. Like, trip of a lifetime. Went to a wedding for like the first 2 days. And then we traveled around a little bit. We were in and around Rajasthan. We were in Delhi, Jaipur, and Agra. And yeah, it was just amazing. It's funny. I went with the intention of hopefully seeking out some music, because I studied some kind of like Indian classical music in college, and I was like, oh yeah, that'd be great to like seek some out. I didn't have to seek out a goddamn thing. Everywhere you go, there's music. It's just someone playing on a drum, someone doing a little puppet show, someone doing something, singing, dancing. It was amazing. It was absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I've lots of thoughts that I need to write down somewhere about it. But actually, I was at an event for Holi, which is the festival of colors. People will know it from the kind of the like chalky colors that people like throw around each other and put in each other's faces and stuff, which is incredible. And what comes on the speaker, like in between all of this, like absolutely banging, like Hindi chart music, but Dance Monkey. So I sent you a little video and I was like, there's no escaping Dance Monkey. So yeah, even however many thousand miles away I was.
Yeah.
Dance Monkey.
Persists. It's funny. That was the second time I was sent Dance Monkey that month. A friend of mine who listens to Songs We Hate podcast that we did last year is a school teacher, and he played it for them, and he sent me a recording of him playing it. I was like, yeah, that's fine. That's an appropriate setting in which to play Dance Monkey. No problem. Mm. But I don't like that it's becoming synonymous with me. That's not good. I don't like
that. I agree. I've had that a couple of times as well. I've had kind of DMs or texts from friends a couple of times when they've heard the song, and I'm like, stop associating the song with me, please. But I understand. But yeah, like I was saying to you earlier, I left when it was basically winter, and I'm back now and the spring is here. Yeah. The clocks have sprung forward, and it's lovely. It's great. Good vibes.
It is nice. Yes. It is normal now. Much more sunshine than we have been used to. We're moving into spring and summer. And that also means that there's plenty of music in which to discuss.
Yeah.
This is a best of the month, best of March episode. Plenty of albums. I think March was a very fruitful time for new albums. And certainly even looking ahead to April as well, it seems like March is a big month for releases. So we'll be talking about some of our favorites of the month as well. And of course, I've been busy in the last few weeks.
You've been a busy bee. Andrea. I've been listening.
Yeah. We had David Holmes on, McKay talking about Fight Like Apes in Palestine. We had David Hanratty from No Encore on talking about Meet Me in the Bathroom, the documentary. And I was at Fight Like Apes last week. So good buzz of that gig now, I have to say.
Good.
It felt like a big celebration in the Olympia.
Actually, can I do a little plug for my other podcast that is currently on hiatus? I meant to share it like the day after Fight Like Apes were playing. But there is an episode of My Favorite Album with Andrea Cleary featuring the author Caroline O'Donoghue talking about Fight Like Apes' first album. So if anyone's interested in reliving some nostalgic vibes and just keeping the Fight Like Apes train going, go and listen to that. It's on all your podcast providers. Yeah, I meant to share it and then just forgot, so I'm sharing it.
Listen, look, you're only a vac last week. You're fine.
Stop.
You're
fine. I'm still on India time.
Okay, good. Okay, it's let's talk about some new music that we loved in the last month. I'm gonna kick it off. Let's talk about Scaring the Hose, the JPEG Mafia and Danny Brown album. A album that is absolutely batshit in many ways. It's crazy. It's kind of probably the rap album of the year so far, I'd say.
Okay.
Let's hear a bit of a track called God Look. Kind of hard to encapsulate a single album like this because it's kind of all over the place in the best possible way. It's really blown out, as you can kind of hear there. That track is called God Loves You. It's real messy. It's all over the shop in a really disorientating, discombobulating way. It's very erratic, industrial. It's got that like those blown out bass kind of things by JPEG Mafia produces the whole thing. Danny Brown is a, you know, he is his own person. He is completely his own MC. And he works really well on this, and him and JPEG Mafia work really well together on these tracks. There's also some great song titles as well, called like Jack Harlow Combo Meal. There's a song called Run the Jewels and a song called Fentanyl Test. There's a lot of references to drugs here. And I think I listened to my first ever episode of the Danny Brown podcast last week, and I was like, whoa, I don't think I can ever listen to this again. He's like, he was close to saying very problematic stuff. And I was like, is he joking? I think he's joking. He's joking. He seems he's a man on the edge, on the precipice sometimes. And he was at Cypress OS last month and he did say he was going into rehab. So I was like, is that real or what? It's hard to know. But there's definitely some element of like erratic kind of vibes here. But more than anything, like, I think the album is brilliant. It's a real like independent bedroom kind of release. There's videos of Danny Brown like screaming into a microphone on his bed and stuff for this album. And it's really just like, it's got that freneticism that just bursts forth from the speakers. It's really like, it's a bit special. It's a bit special. Here's a little bit of a song called Perfect for another bit of a blast of it. And I'm looking like, who are you? It's Peggy and Danny. Everybody know what's in the Cobra clutch. Got the game on the crack. Yeah, you niggas. Gotta put on like we swim, fellas. We don't take the time. And you know I don't know any other name tonight under the heaven. Walking this bitch with a wall. Fuck what you're doing. Give me that Nancy, give me that Ruth, give me that Barbara, check out the truth. I feel like Trump when I step in the booth, yeah. Tripping like Judy, you know how I do. Stick for the Mulianis. So yeah, lots to recommend here. I think with a lot of the albums I'm going to talk about today, a lot of them came out like last week. So still digesting them, definitely. Scared in the Hose is 36 minutes long. It's but there's so much going on here on these 14 tracks. Most of them are very short, but production-wise, like as you can hear there, there's a lot happening. There's Fentanyl Tester has a Khalees Milkshake sample as well. There's loads going on here. It's a lot of fun. I think this is going to be one of those ones that will stick with me at the end of the year because it's got so much to offer as well. So we're going to come back to some more, another rap tune in a while, but let's go to your first choice, Andrea.
Yeah, my first choice is the second album from Dublin musician Alva Reddy, which is called Endless Affair. It's got great cover art. I was really looking forward to this album for a while now, after hearing the singles that have been released from it. And as I texted her recently after my first listen to it, it's a banger. So I've chosen a couple of tracks from it. I mean, my favorite is the one I'm gonna play now, which is one of the singles. It's called Shit Show. It's just such a good indie rock song. So here's Shit Show. This is so embarrassing. Won't you take me home? 'Cause I need to forget everything. If I stand a chance, a beginning of yeah. No more staring at the ceiling. A beginning. Shit Show from Alva Reddy. I mean, we were really big fans of her first album, Personal History, and we've been kind of following her with interest. And I think, thankfully, with this second album, there's that kind of sweet spot where there's a bit of growth. You know, you're coming out of the very kind of reflective, confessional first album and into something a little bit more mature. Her choruses are so, so good, as you can hear there on Shit Show. There's kind of upbeat indie rock tunes that just should be played on every radio station. But then there's also kind of, she retains that kind of very self-reflective, kind of looking inwards lyricism that made her first album so good and so interesting and so kind of raw. She's just such a good lyricist. Like she's really good at that sort of thing where I think we were talking about it on our choice podcast with Una, about Sorka Richardson, that kind of specificity that through being hyper specific kind of becomes universal. And there's a lot of that on this record. Another great track from it is A Mess. And a lot of these songs are kind of about feeling maybe like you're too immature for the world, or you haven't quite grown up enough yet compared to the other people around you. And just that sort of feeling of like feeling a bit stuck, or just feeling like you're being a mess, or feeling like you're being too loud at a party, or, you know, there's a song called Last to Leave. And they're great. They're just such good songs. But yeah, here's A Mess.
Why keep fighting?
So just, I love how she sounds on those songs, that those kind of like upbeat, fuzzy, garagey guitar songs. I think she's got a little bit of a like Strokes first album, like vocal, something's happening with her vocals there. She kind of sounds like she's singing down a phone a little bit. It's such a great album. It's one that you can really sink your teeth into in terms of the lyrics. It's very, very relatable if you're a millennial woman, I think, feeling a bit confused as to what is actually expected of you. You know, she's dealing with a lot of really interesting themes of like that idea of coming of age again, which she did on her first album as well. And I think that she's kind of shown a lot of growth in terms of how she's kind of dealing with them. But yeah, that's Alva Reddy, and I cannot recommend it enough, Endless Affair.
Yeah, Endless Affair, Alva Reddy, second album, great. As I said, loads of albums to get through this month, and some I haven't even. Thankfully, you're going to cover one or two that I didn't get a chance to pick. But one of them that I'm really fascinated by.
And you're going to cover the ones that I didn't get a chance to.
Okay, good. One of them I'm really fascinated by at the moment is Eve's Tumor. The album is very long, title is very long. It's called Praise the Lord Who Chews But Which Does Not Consume, or simply Hot Between Worlds. Anyway, it's the fifth album from Sean Bowie. He's Eve's Tumor, based in Turin, from Baltimore, I believe. No, sorry, from Miami. So I think I went to see Eve's Tumor last year with the live band. And I think when I first heard Eve's Tumor, it was all very like weird, ambient, kind of experimental kind of music. It's really not that anymore. That was the first album. It's been quite different since then. This is Eve's Tumor have been on Warp for a while now, and there's an ambition that I think has been fully realized now on their work. And that ambition is to make this kind of gargantuan, pristine, cinematic, like kind of electronic rock music. And I think it works so well in the context as well of this year, where the start, I think probably my favorite album in January, I think it was probably January or February, was Little Yachty's Let's Start Here, essentially a cool psychedelic rock album. And chiming in with the fact that it's the 50th anniversary of Dark Side of the Moon last week, there seems to be a lot of this stuff going around, and I'm certainly been listening to a lot of it. So this is fitting right in for me at the moment. So here's my standout so far of from the Praise the Lord album from Eve's Tumor. This is called Lovely Sewer. Lovely Sewer from Eve's Tumor. The album was produced by Noah Goldstein, who did a lot of stuff with, I believe, Kanye back in the day. Credits with Frank Ocean, Rosalia, Rihanna, and Bon Iver. And the album was mixed by Alan Moulder, who you may know as his work with Nine Inch Nails, Smashing Pumpkins, the likes of The Cure. Kind of a lot of shoegazy stuff. So there's a bit of shoegaze element here, I think, in this album. It's a very sensory-rich album. It's the drums stand out for me a lot, but all the fang plays, like it's very pristine and like really nicely recorded, and in the best way. It kind of feels like a really cool, proper 21st century like rock album, all detailed and kind of gilded, and then but also spacious and kind of breathing at the same time. So it doesn't feel repressive. It feels like a very open atmosphere to spend time in. And here's another example. This is the last song on the album. It's called Ebony Eye. It's quite a, I think the, I read the Pitchfork review today actually, and it says like there's, it's almost as if like he has been, Yves Tumor has been racing to kind of catch up with the creativity that he wants to get to. And that often means that like he's making these quite big songs that I think he's quite, he's getting there now, and the production is on point and everything is working really well. But here's like, just this kind of sounds massive here. This is Ebony Eye. So that's Yves Tumor there. You can hear the drums echoing there. It sounds really good to me. Next time, Yves Tumor are back in Ireland playing the Three Olympia Theatre on the 27th of November. And I'm sure if you're listening from outside Ireland, he's on tour in the EU and elsewhere. So yeah, really good band, and really enjoying this. I'm getting a lot of those albums at the moment where I just want to put them on again and again. And it's great to have three or four of those all at once. So our next album, which you're going to discuss, thankfully, is one that I haven't, hasn't found its way into my rotation yet. It came out last Friday. Tell me about the new album from...
Well, did you know that there's an ocean under... There's an ocean under... What is it?
Ocean
Something
Boulevard.
Boulevard? There's a tunnel. There's a tunnel there's under a Ocean tunnel Boulevard. Under. I'm always thinking, did you know that there's an ocean under Tunnel Boulevard? I blame Lana. Yeah, obviously the ninth album from Lana Del Rey, somebody who I didn't jump on board with basically until Norman fucking Rockwell in 2019. And I mean, that album just made me really, really sit up and take notice of her. And I think everything that she's released since has been sort of quietly experimental and really gracious and graceful. And just, yeah, it just feels like she's really relaxed in terms of her space within the industry. She's not, you know, it feels like she doesn't have anything to prove anymore. You know, like when a Lana Del Rey album comes out now, it's covered by like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Like it's a sort of like a highbrow affair, weirdly. And, you know, it comes with a lot of discourse. It comes with a lot of, you know, deep readings of lyrics, you know, not quite to the point of like Taylor Swift stands, but it's kind of, yeah, it's definitely getting there in terms of kind of deep reading of her work. So yeah, there's a tunnel under Ocean Boulevard is, like I said, her ninth studio album. It is 16 songs long. There's a couple of kind of interludes and stuff, but even at that, they're quite long. I've chosen a couple of tracks. I chose the first track, actually, the Grants, Grant being, Lana's actual surname, because I just think it's a very, very brave and interesting way to open an album. It features Melody Perry and Patty Howard, who are backing singers of Whitney Houston, in this kind of lyrical interpolation of John Denver's Rocky Mountain High, which, you know, you put all that together, it's the first song of a Lana Del Rey album, and you're like, yeah, makes sense, you know, why not? But it's really, it's just stunning. And like she did on Norman Rockwell, and like she has done on the kind of two albums since then. She really kind of grabs you with that first track in terms of introducing the atmosphere to you. So I think she does it really well here. Here is The Grants.
I'm gonna take mine of you with me.
Mine. Say it again. Mine of you with me. Thank you. One more time. One, two, ready.
I'm gonna take mine of you with me. I'm gonna take mine of you with me. I'm gonna take mine of you with me. Like Rocky Mountain High, the way John Denver sings.
So you say there's a chance for us. Should I do a dance for once? Your family may bite.
So that is, I mean, just a snippet of that song, which is, I think, actually quite long. It's just under 5 minutes. It's a really beautiful, beautiful song. And I mean, you can hear a kind of a gospel influence in there. There is an interlude in it that is, you know, a gospel sermon. It's a very piano-led, for the most part, it's a piano-led album. Yeah. A lot of ballads, a lot of Lana kind of putting her lyrics to the fore, and she has like quite a lot to say on this album, I think. About, I mean, we heard in A&W how she's kind of addressing her career and how she's been treated, and sexism and misogyny within the music industry, and I think she's like, very interestingly, she's also kind of looking back at her own career and musically kind of introducing that in here. The other track I've chosen is actually the last track. I didn't do that on purpose, but the last track, Taco Truck XVB. The VB in that title is Venice Bitch, which was a song on Norman fucking Rockwell. And she kind of reintroduces it here to close the album. It's around maybe a little bit past halfway through the song, with kind of more of a trap beat. It's a strange closer to this album. Album is a weird decision, and I think it's an even weirder decision to kind of tack it on to the end of another song instead of just having it as like a bonus song or something. But it's a decision I like, because she is somebody who is so constantly in conversation with herself and with her past kind of iterations, as Taylor Swift would kind of do it, her eras. And I think this Lana Del Rey era is one of kind of reflection. So yeah, this is Taco Truck VB.
Back in the garden, we're getting high now because we're older. Me and myself are like diamonds, my baby crimson and clover. Whoa, 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 whatever. Everything, whatever. Whoa, 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 whatever. Everything's whatever. Baby.
So yeah, I think that's an interesting decision. I wonder if by doing that, she's kind of closing off a kind of an era between 2019 and now, and if what comes next is going to be a bit different.
Yeah,
there's
maybe.
There's also, Jack Antonoff does produce on this album, but he's one of maybe four producers, and I can't seem to locate information as to what songs he actually worked on. She also co-produced the record. There's also some guest spots, features, that's the word. John Batiste, Father John Misty, Bleachers are just three of them. Obviously, she's worked with Father John Misty twice before. This is their third collaboration. That's a song on the album that I really, really like. It's called Let the Light In. And I reviewed this album on Arena last week, and I said there that I think Lana and Father John Misty and Lana and Josh are kind of kindred spirits in a way. I think they obviously make music that doesn't sound a whole lot like one another, although maybe you could argue that Father John Misty's most recent album is kind of doing a similar kind of nostalgic 20th century thing. But I do think they're concerned with similar things, and they're concerned with, they both sort of play a role in their music. Both of them have changed their names. They have stage names. Both of them have kind of, you know, musical personas that they perform. So I think they're a very interesting duo. I would love if they released an album together. That would be like, you know, a dream. That'd be on the wish list for me. But yeah, I think overall, this album, it's not quite as it doesn't hit you quite as immediately as maybe some of her previous records, but I do think that it's really, really mature. It's you can like I said at the beginning, you can just feel how relaxed she is. You can feel that she's comfortable enough in where she's at in her career to take some creative risks, to, you know, make some quite long songs that for me really, really still hold my attention, even though it might just be her and a piano and not much else happening. There's still just so much atmosphere that she manages to get, especially out of her voice. And yeah, I just think she's just great. She's on such a good run. And I would really recommend this to people who are maybe even still a little bit unsure about Lana Del Rey, because I know that there's a lot of people who just don't quite get it. But I think that this would be a nice kind of introduction to where she's at now. But it definitely rewards people who've been following her for a few years.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think I would probably start with Norman fucking Rockwell first, but because I just haven't got into this album yet.
For sure.
Because it's maybe a little bit long and... like it is an hour and
it's
17
long.
Minutes.
It's like an hour. It's not a little bit long. It is long. Minutes, something like that. Like it is.
Yeah.
And are
these songs interludes? If they're like 4.5 minutes long, they're like, to me, an interlude is usually a short thing. I was like, listen to that Judah Smith interlude. I was like, it's still going. I was like, should yes. I replay this? I was like, no, it's 4.5 minutes long. An interlude. I actually don't know what that is. I don't know the reasoning behind it yet. I don't know why.
No,
there's a preacher and some piano on track 5. You know what I mean?
She's just so like liberal with like what kind of iconography she decides to pull for whatever message it is she has. Like, you know, she's like, why not take a bit of gospel? Why not? Like, she's sort of. I get the impression that she kind of views everything in culture or religion or society or whatever as like, you know, like Play-Doh or something. Like, she can just kind of pick and choose it and put it all together and make something out of it. Like, there's a kind of a detachment that you need to have in order to do that. Maybe detachment isn't the right word, but this kind of like meta-analysis of society and culture that she's obviously very capable of doing very well, and she kind of just takes things like that and puts them to use for her own purposes. Do you know what I mean? And those purposes aren't always obvious. They're certainly not obvious to me, but yeah, I definitely need a bit more time with this album. I mean, obviously on Arena, I had to give it a rating after only being with it for a couple of days. But I have been sticking with it. It's been a nice album to have on kind of while I'm working, and I'm getting more songs are kind of revealing themselves to me the more I listen to it. So yeah, it's very good. I like it. The Lana fans will be happy for sure.
For sure. For sure. Okay, my next choice is from also a fifth album, As With a Youth's Tumor. This is Unknown Mortal Orchestra's fifth album, and here's a song on it called The Widow. That's The Widow. I picked an instrumental bit there, so let's hear a bit of That Life as well for full vibes. So yeah, this is the fifth album from Ruben Nielsen, the New Zealand musician. Context for this album is it was made in Palm Springs, California. During the pandemic, Nielsen's brother Cody flew to New Zealand, from New Zealand to Palm Springs to help him. One of their Hawaiian uncles was having some health issues, and they both decide to move then from New Zealand to Portland and Portland respectively to Hawaii. And with that, it's where they kind of grew up, and it's gave a lot of kind of feelings about his family. Ruben Nielsen's family actually were musicians who played on hotel resorts and stuff like that. So it kind of reminded him of his childhood of swimming in hotel swimming pools and hanging out with show bands in the Pacific. So that's kind of an influence for the album. There's a lot of kind of West Coast AOR and a little bit yacht rocky kind of buzz going on. But same again, Unknown Mortal Orchestra, the DNA of that is still there. The project is kind of lo-fi, kind of gauzy instrumental music, kind of tight, funky guitars, but like never sounding too brilliant or too great. It always sounds a bit degraded or something. So that's there. I think this is a really lovely album. I've been putting this on a lot at the moment. And again, I think it's a long enough kind of release. I think it's about an hour probably. Yeah, it's an hour straight. So 14 songs and maybe a couple too many at some points. But it's kind of those one of those nice albums you just leave running along. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Because I did think didn't know where they were going. There were some great songs on the last album. Sex and Food, terrible title. But that was 2018. And Multi-Love from 2015 was probably my favourite of their albums overall. But I don't think they ever really had a bad album. There's always something to recommend with an all-Mortal Orchestra. But I think this is just a lovely... That first track, I think, I realise now maybe why I picked it. It's like, do you know what it reminds me of? It's like those instrumentals that the Beastie Boys have on some of their albums where it's like they're jamming and playing kind of like funk and soul kind of bits. That's what that kind of reminds me of. So I love that. So that's Unknown Mortal Orchestra. I'm just called V5. So that's my choice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My next choice, my last album that I've chosen is from Lancome, obviously. False Lancome. It's the follow-up to the big one, The Live Long Day. But it's what, their third album as Lancome? And then there were other albums when they weren't Lancome before.
There was one when they were lynched, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it's the big follow-up to the big album. A lot of pressure on Lancome for this album, I think. And here's a little taste of it. I've chosen a song called Master Crowley's, which if you play it maybe from around the halfway point, Niall, just to get a sense of how the song switches up. It starts as kind of like a traditional Irish tune, kind of standard, and then it kind of moves into something a little bit different. This is Master Crowley's.
Have you ever heard a song so readily fall into a snake pit or a mud? It's the way that happens. It's just so interesting. Yeah. It's like it's sludging itself into oblivion at the same time as it's kind of coming to a close, and then it comes back again. It's a brilliant song. This is the one that stood out to me on first listen for sure of the album itself.
Yeah, and it's so subtle how they do it. It's not this big kind of. It's not quite this big moment that happens. It's just this the introduction of these very, very subtle elements. And then all of a sudden, you're in this very strange place. And Lancome do that so well. I mean, The Live Long Day, obviously, when we were talking about that album, when it first came out as being, you know, such a step forward, if you will, of the kind of Irish folk traditional kind of sound, spoke a lot about the drone on on that album and the kind of the sense of dread that they're able to invoke with their music. I think on this record, that's definitely still present. I think particularly on the fugues, there's three interludes or fugues on this album. Lana Del Rey, take note, they are around a minute or 2 minutes long each. And they're nice little kind of markers on the record. They're kind of, you know, the point at which you'll turn over the LP. But there is also this kind of softer side to them, a bit more melodic side. There's, I mean, a couple of songs that stood out to me are Netta Perseus and Lord of Bore and Mary Flynn, which are just vocally such beautiful songs, melodically such beautiful songs. And they don't lean in quite as much to that kind of dready drone sludgy thing that we already kind of know they're really good at. Here they're just kind of being straightforward, like musicians, and showing their musicianship. Not that the other way isn't musicianship, but you know what I mean, kind of more traditional expected musicianship. And it's that element of the album that I found really at times just completely took my breath away. Like I think I need to do like a side by side listen, but I think I prefer this to The Live Long Day. I think it's a step forward for them. Yeah, actually, look, if we can listen to a little bit of Netta Perseus, because I think it's just probably the most beautiful song I've heard this year. It's incredible. A beautiful rendition of that song, which is like a very old folk song from what I can understand, and like Rady Pete, can we take a moment? I mean, just the dynamics of her voice on this album, like she's so restrained there, like she's so subtle, and she can get so much out of her voice when it feels like she's kind of pulling back and just doing what serves the song. But then when you listen to her on a song like Go Dig My Grave, she's a force of nature. You know, she's such a dynamic vocalist. She is, she blows me away every time I hear her sing. I think she's particularly brilliant on this record. But I think the thing with Lancome is that, and again, if you heard me on Arena last week, I'm repeating myself a little bit, but they are the very, very best example of what this genre is right now. This sort of this point in folk music in Ireland where people are branching out and people are, you know, kind of figuring out how do you retain the qualities of this kind of tradition while also injecting it with a bit of modernity, a bit of kind of something personal and something that feels right for the times that we're living in now. And they are the touchstone, I think, of what can be done within this genre. They're just so creative and free and unapologetic, and they're not wringing their hands about whether or not they're staying true to a centuries old tradition or anything, because it's their tradition and they've mastered their instruments. They are such good players, but they're also just so much more than that. Like they're innovators, and they really get to the heart of what it is that this music can evoke and can do and can function as in Ireland today. I think it's an outstanding record. Like it's just, from start to finish, there's nothing on it that I don't like. It's just great. And it's sequenced so brilliantly as well.
you have to know the rules in order to break them. And I think Langham have really done that here. And, you know, whatever the purists think, if there are purists who are giving out about this, let them do it. They've proven themselves that they... Do you know what's fascinating, I think, as well? It's worth mentioning is the... If you actually just watch that the video for Go Dig My Grave and just see how this band are operating in ways that are just so different to... a lot of their peers, that is such a fantastic example of their craft and vision and how they see their songs. Very well done. It's quite hypnotic. It's obviously very brave thing to do in order to, when you release an album, is like your first song is 8.5 minutes long from the album and it's a slow burner. And I know they've done that before with The Wild Rover, but, you know, especially with Go Dig My Grave, it's a song about a very difficult, like, a woman who's basically killed herself or hanging herself or hung herself after being scorned or rejected. So it's got a lot going on there. But the way that they kind of transcend its source material is so wonderful. And I think they do that a lot here on this album. Also, kind of
make the source material kind of bring it into modern times and like how they interact with like their national identity as folk musicians and the kind of retelling these stories, recontextualizing them to a point. But I mean, they're not changing very much with like lyrically in terms of the songs that they are covering, for want of a better word, but how they kind of, recontextualize them into something that is recognizable in modern Ireland in terms of, you know, like in Go Dig My Grave, in terms of gender or in terms of, kind of, you know, other institutions that we kind of come up against all the time. And they have this sense of like circularity or, you know, just, what's the word? That these issues themselves are transcendent, no matter when you're living in, that these are still relevant songs. And I think that's what modern folk music is good at doing. Like, this is what this new kind of this wave, you know, I think Lisa O'Neill does it really well as well when she performs kind of old folk songs as well. It's just reinvigorating it with a bit of anger, and the kind of anger that would have been there in the first place. A bit of anger, a bit of sorrow, a bit of something, a bit of life that we can kind of recognize as existing now. It's so hard to put your finger on what it is that makes these songs feel so modern when they come out of Langham. But they do. They feel incredibly modern, and they feel incredibly apt for our times. You know, I think it's I think it's a political record as much as anything else. You know,
I think they definitely have a grounding or an understanding of like drone and ambient and like maybe metal and industrial that they can draw on as well. That makes it feel like it is pulling in different directions. And I think, I'm glad you picked this one, because I didn't include it myself yet, because I'm still getting to know it. And it's the kind of album, like a lot of these albums this week, that I just feel like I'm going to need a lot more time with them. Not in a bad way, just in a way that I'm like, I'm really enjoying this and I'm happy to just keep going back to them. And it's really nice to have that after, you know, not that it's been too quiet the last few months, but, you know, it's nice to have a glut of albums to... Well, January, February are never too busy, but we think we did a fair bit. Loads of tunes. But to have albums to get your teeth into is really, really nice. So, really enjoying that.
Can almost say it's been ages.
It has been ages, and I've seen them recently wearing, I think if you watch the NPR Tiny Desk concert with Langham, they're wearing a t-shirt from this band, and it is Kneecap. Let's have a listen.
Oh, it's been ages since we made the front pages. Since Jerry Leonard hiatus, back to annoying cons that hate us. It's back to basics, a scumbag who them shameless. Take more than not to tame us. All your fault cause you made us famous. All your fault cause you made us famous. Sticking our face in your papers, but we get loved by our neighbors. You keep track when you're giving favors. Sad, Curtis Gale go well to jazz. Said the heat, it duff a last. I change with your father, duff the mass.
این مجا فرده دفل ما سحنه را در هند و لست نیست مفوتی شند و تسک کنگ را دی نو و نسک آن کلین آر فیس این نین یر شکم اتس انف فر دسپویر آر رن سنسیشنل ایل این اف جاب دان Fuck me, it's been ages since my Mickey was contagious. So you thought the kneecap frizz was over, we're back. Keeping diabetic politicians raging. Been a while since cuts were flaming. Kneecap, no ranting, no raving. It's been no naming or shaming. Time to rash, your career is saving. Naomi Long, do you need another epidural? All cause we unveiled the mural. Like Makara, why so cruel? Cause it's been ages. God bless us and save us. Back with a bang and it feels amazing. Going nowhere, we're going places. Oh, it's been ages since we made the front pages. Jerry Leonard, I ate us back the annoying
concert. Okay, that's Kneecap. As you can hear there, the Belfast Trio. I love this because I think it's a really great example of how you can rap in an Irish accent and sound so fucking good. And obviously these lads have been doing that since they came out, and rightly so. They've been lauded for it, and also a bit notorious for terms of revealing murals and stuff like that, and for anti-royalist sentiments at gigs and stuff like that. All stuff that young lads and young women should be doing. And they are true proponents of all of that as well, in terms of, like, they do it with humour, and I think they do it with grace as well, too. And in those raps, I think. Do you know what's really lovely? It's really lovely to see, if you go on Genius for this song, you see translations for the Irish on it, and it's great. And I think that's brilliant. So that's Makara and Mowgli Bap in particular. And so I love how they move between Irish and English here on a really with ease. And the beat is here by Wilhouse, the Dublin producer, I believe. So that is it's been ages. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot more coming from Kneecap this year. Carlo, sorry, he's from Carlo. Let's not assume everyone's from Dublin. Thanks.
Okay, my second to last choice, first track and first of two covers. This is, so when I heard that this is going to happen, that Sorka Richardson is going to cover Hot Fuss by The Killers in full, I was very excited because that is one of my favorite albums. It's like I credit that album with being one of the albums that made me pursue working in, you know, music writing. I absolutely love it. And she has released two tracks from it, Jenny Was a Friend of Mine and Mr. Brightside. So as not to just play Mr. Brightside on a podcast that I co-host in any form, I've chosen Jenny Was a Friend of Mine. I just love that song, and I love what she's done with it. It sounds like a Sorka Richardson song. But yeah, I think she's done something really interesting with it. So yeah, this is Jenny Was a Friend of Mine by The Killers, covered by Sorka Richardson. Don't have too much else to say about it, but it's just lovely. I'm so excited.
The album was recorded for Turntable Kitchen, a Seattle label. We were telling me about this when we chatted to her last year, and then she had a few copies actually at the Merchy Christmas, I think, as well. And on vinyl, because it's all on vinyl. That's the whole thing. So you can't get this. This will not be on streaming services. Those are the only songs.
Sorka, email it to me, please.
She did say,
you have my email, send it to me.
So yeah, this is out on vinyl only at the moment. So if you want to get it in this album in full, you have to buy it.
Is it available? Can I buy it on our Bandcamp?
Don't know. I haven't seen it anywhere.
Oh, sorry, I'm devastated. I didn't know that this was a physical only release.
Yeah.
I'm stressed now.
Yeah.
It's fine, I'll find it.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, yeah, you will, I'm sure. I'm sure we can sort it out for you.
Yeah. But yeah, I can't wait to hear it. I think it's a great idea. I think Ryan Adams might have sullied, you know, artists doing this with other artists with his cover of 1989 by Taylor Swift, which I liked. Okay.
Well, we can reclaim it now.
Ryan was, I think more artists should do this. I love covers, but covering a whole album, I think, is a feat. And it really requires you to get to know the album, really dig into it and find kind of where you sit in it, you know, where your sound sits in it. So I always think it's a really interesting thing to do. I'm going to find this.
Rosie Carney did the Radiohead album, The Bends, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I think that was a kind of a lockdown project, wasn't it? More of a lockdown thing, but yeah.
Mm.
Very good. Okay. My last song, as is now in my tradition, I pick an older song. So in order to shameless plug my last choice, I'm going to pick a song from the Indie Sleaze playlist because I'm doing an Indie Sleaze party. Myself and yourself talked to Louise McSharry last year for a podcast about Indie Sleaze. And I remember chatting to Louise after that going, do you want to do a club night about this? And one thing or another never happened. And then when Meet Me in the Bathroom came up again this year, I was like, listen to all this music again. I was like, there is an opportunity to do something fun and a bit nostalgic. So we're doing it basically Good Friday, April 7th, late night in Workman's Cellar. Myself and Alex Donald would be playing, doing Indie Sleaze party club hits, basically. All the music of the era from the early 2000s, especially the New York era. So we're talking all the Indian rock stuff that people like Andrea love, like The Strokes. And we've got LCD Sound System, Yeah Yeahs.
I mean, the Interpol song that you're about to play, I had forgotten about. And I just know that when you play it, I'm going to just zoom backwards
good.
In time. I can't believe.
Yeah. So along with all the indie stuff, there's obviously going to be some new rave and nostalgic stuff and Electro Clash and remixes and Bloghouse. So one of the songs I'm going to be playing is, I'm sure, although we only have 4 hours or 3.5 hours, whatever it is, 4 hours. So I'm not going to be able to get everything in, but I'm definitely hoping to play this one. This is Fisher Spooner and Emerge.
You don't need to emerge from nothing. You don't need to tear up with. Feels good. Looks good. Sounds good. Looks good. Feels good too. Feels good too. That's right. Feels good too. That's right.
Waiting for that that vocal bit to come in, the backing vocal, of course, that was Emerge from Fisher Spooner.
I reckon I haven't listened to that song in about 12 years. Like, it's easily. Oh my god! And I remembered every single bit of it. I remembered.
That is 2003. That song is from. So we're really early on. Wow, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Jesus, I got into that song late then. Yeah. I was only a babby in 2003. Well, not a babby.
There is an Indie Sleeves playlist if you're interested in coming along. On Spotify, on my on the Northern Nine Spotify public profile, so you can have a look at that. There's 4.5 or 5 hours. 4.5 hours of music. There's 60 songs on that, including this. Yeah, we're going to be playing a bit of everything like this. So it'd be fun. I think there's a good look.
That one doesn't give me as much nostalgia because I feel like I've heard that in clubs. Like,
yeah. It's never really gone.
I mean? That never really
has gone away.
Never went out
for
of style.
For sure.
No. It's great.
But that is, obviously that was it's the A-track remix of Heza Roll. All sorts of stuff there. So yuck. Shameful plug, but also I think it'll be a fun night. So Workman Cellar, Good Friday, April 7th.
Ain't no shame.
There's tickets on Eventbrite, so come along to that. So, okay, you're going to finish up the pod.
Yeah. So like I said, second cover. This is Crea, and it's Don't Tell Me, and it's from Madonna, and it sounds like this, and I'll tell you more about Crea in a minute.
Don't tell me something that we do. Tell me I'm everything I'm not, but please don't tell me you stop. Don't you ever tell.
Speaking of nostalgia.
My apologies to Karen Cowley of Wyvern Lingo. I think she's pronounced Crea. I pronounce it Crea because my name is Andrea. And when I see that,
it's quite understandable.
Obviously cover of the Madonna hit, Don't Tell Me, which has made a bit of a comeback as a tune.
Is this a TikTok thing again?
Well, yeah, kind of, but also just a lot of like people doing like with the kind of cowboy renaissance that happened over lockdown. Just people learning the Madonna dance from that song, which is a great dance. Yeah, it's always been one of my favorite Madonna songs, and I think Karen does a great job with it. You know, it's really typical of her voice, like injects it with so much soul. And like good covers like this should do, is a nice way to kind of pay a little bit more attention to the lyrics and dive in a little bit deeper with it. But it's just a really lovely cover, really. So yeah, I decided to just pick two covers. As I do every single month, I've forgotten to pick a little throwback song, but
It's my thing. You can't have it.
It's your thing. I think I'll actually just keep it as your thing.
You can do it if you like.
Yeah. I've maybe one or two other little bits in terms of like books and telly and stuff, but I'll get through them quite quickly. In terms of telly, I mean, look, I'm watching Succession, absolute shock of the century. Only one episode out, so I won't talk too much about it, but I will say, I mean, the scene with Tom making fun of Greg's date's bag is one of the best things I've seen on television. It was stunning, and just what an episode. I mean, on the plane journey over and back from India, I watched season 3 because they had it on, you know, the little in-flight thing. So I rewatched season 3. So I really felt like I was up to date and ready going in, and yeah, it didn't disappoint. It was a great first episode. Other thing I've been watching, Married at First Sight Australia. it's so good. I mean, Harry and I have been watching it. We are not, like, as you know, Niall, we're not reality TV people at all. We're not into Love Island. We're not into Real Housewives, anything like that. But there's something about Married at First Sight Australia, and it has to be the Australian one, that just grabs us. And it's just, oh, it's great. We found it on a website where like 30 odd episodes of it have been uploaded. But if you're watching it as it's being released here, kind of on Channel 4 or whatever, it's only up to like episode 6 or something at the minute. So, but it's a good season. If anyone's only on like, if anyone's watching it week by week at the minute, like stick with it. It's great. There's a villain and it's fabulous. So that's my telly. And then I've a couple of books. First is, I don't like recommending really, really long books, but this is a very, very good book. It's like an almost 800 page debut novel from a Swedish author called Lydia Sandgren. The book is called Collected Works, and it follows a man in his 50s who is a book publisher living in Sweden, and his wife went missing a few years ago, but not really went missing in a kind of Scandi noir kind of way, but more like she just kind of up and left, and the fallout from that with between him and his teenage children. And then it also goes back in time to around the time when he was a student and he first met his wife, and he's friends with this kind of artist guy. And it's just sort of like, it's not like the missing wife thing isn't, you know, the main driver of the book or anything like that. It's not really like, it's, I guess, technically a mystery, but it doesn't read like that. It just reads as like a really, really brilliant kind of character study of this very, very vast cast of characters. I think it would make a brilliant television series, and you'd need like 3 seasons to do it. So it is like, you know, probably 760 pages or something. I read it to review it. I think that review will be out this Sunday in the Business Post. But if you're looking for like a really meaty novel, that's a good one. And then I've just started Donna Tartt's The Little Friend, which is her, I think it's the middle book between Secret History and The Goldfinch. And I've kind of seen and heard people say that it's like, it's a bit of a kind of forgotten classic because it comes between those two books that were kind of, you know, talked about a lot and very kind of seminal. But it's a, what do you call it? Like American Gothic sort of thing. A child is found like hanged on a tree, and it's the fallout of that in this kind of small community in America. And so far, like, I've underlined some passages in it that have just been the most beautiful writing I've ever read. Like, she is, oh my god, her language, like, she's it's like a feast. It's incredible. I recommended The Secret History to you, I think, recently enough, but it's a long book, but it's brilliant. But yeah, reading that at the minute. Haven't really been getting too much read at the minute because of the whole PhD, but trying to read more novels for fun and not just the ones that I review. So
sure.
But that's it. Don't think I've seen a single film. Oh, I watched She Said, the film about the two journalists who broke the Harvey Weinstein story, and it was good. If you like Spotlight, you will like She Said. It's kind of
you were saying very on Instagram that you, this is a genre that is your journalistic
genre. Investigative journalism films are my, yeah. So like Zodiac, She Said, All the President's Men, Spotlight. Yeah, just any kind of investigative journalism story, I'm about it. If anyone has any more to recommend me, please do.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch any of them after watching all the, am I right? All the President's Men is the film I'm thinking of, isn't it? I watched it for the first time probably about a month ago. Yeah, Robert Redford, Justin Hoffman, probably about a month ago. It's about the Watergate scandal. And it is just like, it was the first of this style of film. And like every one of these films that you've watched since, like Zodiac and Spotlight, you can just see how the geography and the language and the style of those kinds of films just come from All the President's Men. And it's just such a good watch. Like, I was smiling the whole way through because I was like, oh my God, like twists and turns. Blah. And it's, yeah, it's from 1976. It's a very, very famous film, but typical of me, I kind of come to it late and start telling everyone about it. But But yeah, that's my other business.
I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Oh, Niall, you should absolutely watch it. It's like, it's one of those classics where it's like...
Yeah, I've just never gone around to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's super enjoyable. It's not hard work at all. You don't need to know much about Watergate. It explains a lot to you. Yeah, it's great. Dustin Hoffman's fantastic in it. And obviously Robert Redford is Robert Redford. But yeah, have you any other business?
What did I watch last week? The Whale. Not as bad as I was expecting, but very much based on a play vibes. But also very miserable. Very miserable. Okay. I also watched an old, hey, have you heard of Jackie Chan? I watched his first film, Police Story. It's so much fun.
I recommended this on this very section of this very podcast like 6 months ago. Police Story.
Oh, yeah, it's so much
it's
fun.
It's so good.
It's so much fun. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, I've actually never seen this as either a child or an adult. And I watched it and I was like, holy fuck, what he does with his body is incredible. And all the stunts that everyone else is doing as well. It's pretty spectacular. So yeah, it's really
and
something.
Michelle Yeoh is in it, isn't she? She's in that one. I think she's in that one.
In the first one. Do you know, maybe I need not. To see
I watched two of them, I think. In the series because she does a stunt where she...
Yeah, because, oh, she's in the third one.
Okay.
Yeah. I need to find the other ones at some point, although it's not something I want to watch all
the
time.
I have them on DVD here if you'd like to borrow them, if you can't find them anywhere, but they're so...
Do you know what? They're probably in the library. They're probably in the library.
Oh, the library. You know how I feel about the library.
It's been a while since we recommended the library. But listen, the other thing we haven't talked about is The Last of Us and the finish of The Last of Us. And not that we need to discuss too much in detail, but I'm trusting you enjoyed it.
I just absolutely loved that show. Not the ending I was expecting.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Okay, mild spoilers for The Last of Us season one. I thought one of them would die. I thought it would be Joel. This old man, you know.
Yeah.
I thought the ending was incredible. Like, and from what I can understand from my friends who've played the game, who have been talking to Carlo mostly. Hi, Carlo. It was like pretty accurate or pretty faithful to the ending in terms of the philosophical questions that it asks. I think it's a really complicated character study of Joel. And I thought Pedro Pascal just did like an amazing job of that character. Bella Ramsey, like their performance in, like, was it episode 6 where it's Ellie and her like girlfriend going around the mall? I just thought it was incredible. Like the whole way through, I think Bella Ramsey is an absolute star. They're going to do like fucking huge things, and just one of the best performances I've seen, especially from a person so young. Like, what are they, like 20 or something? Like, so young, so amazing. I've obviously been enjoying the rest of the world catching up to Pedro Pascal. Like, that's nice. some of us have been here since Oberyn Martell. Okay, I'll just say that much. But
well, he's got a stylist since, I think. So, you know,
he's got
there are more pointed sartorial vibes going just, on for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a couple of episodes.
The jumper draped over the shoulders,
Stop. I mean,
the big glasses.
Just, what a lovely man. What a lovely, lovely man. But yeah, I watched a few episodes of The Mandalorian because I was like having, withdrawals. I was like, I need more Pedro in my life. And I'm not as into The Mandalorian. I like the little green freak. And I like
Baby Grogu.
He's
so fucking cute.
Incredibly
so cute.
Like, he's kind of outrageously cute. Because I didn't watch The Mandalorian because I remember seeing pictures of Grogu and I was like, no, absolutely not. They made you for people like me to just obsess over and think that's my baby. And then I watched a few episodes of it and I was like, that's my baby. So yeah, he's ridiculously cute, but I will not buy any merch. But yeah, I might stick with it. I'm not like...
Are you just at the start?
Yeah, I watched like 2 or 3 episodes. It's good. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some good episodes there.
Okay.
I'm watching the new season at the moment, and it's like it's episodic and it's easy watch.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't do Star Wars a disservice, which is
no,
you know, these days is a big deal.
Yeah,
so
yeah, for sure, yeah.
That's helpful. Mm. And what else have we been watching? I've been watching season one of Hacks.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this. I saw before. People in the Discord talking about it. What is it?
It's what is it now? Is it Gene Smart? And it's basically like old comedian meets young comedian and culture clash. Gene Smart, who's in lots of stuff, and Hannah Einbinder. It's basically them two. She gets the younger one gets hired for the older comedian who's in has a Vegas residency, and how they clash. So okay. I've only seen the first four episodes so far, but I'm enjoying it. It's also like very easy watch, which is absolutely fine. The other thing, Kunk on Earth is a Philomena Kunk has a US net. Well, it was on BBC as well, but US Netflix TV show. You know, you've seen Philomena Kunk, you know the vibe. She's funny and makes people feel awkward. She's funny about history and makes people feel awkward. And then the latest Bobby Fingers diorama video on YouTube about Michael Jackson and his hair going on fire during the Pepsi commercial is probably the best thing I've seen in a long time. Obviously, Bobby Fingers is formerly one half of Rubber Bandits and is got really into model making as I think as a career. Seemingly, from watching the videos anyway, and in his spare time, he makes these incredibly surreal, but incredibly detailed videos of tiny dioramas of famous pop culture bits. And
I can see drunk Mel Gibson arrest diorama.
Do you know what? I'd never seen the first two. I was aware of the first two, but I didn't know the context, and I was like, I was so confused by what was going on. But now I finally watched that one. And I'm like, right, I want to see this. I'm going to actually watch the other two tonight. But the newest one is absolutely fantastic.
Okay, I'll watch that.
I think Bobby Fingers is involved in the Pagan Rave at the Body and Soul Festival as well. So some of those, there's some appearances basically. So great video, worth to watch. Incredible craftsmanship, but also surreal stuff. So and an amazing song as well. So just watch it.
Will do.
Bobby Fingers, Michael Jackson. We'll be back next week to talk about more music. I think April will bring new albums from Yeji, Feist, Jesse Ware, The National, Everything But The Girl and Daughter, so we might be talking about some of that at some point. But yeah, it has been nice to come back and have you back and just talk
nice
about
to be
music
back.
Again.
Thanks for having me back.
And yeah, before we go, let me say just patreon.com/909 if you want to support the show and support the website. Our Discord access is through the Patreon, and you'll get to chat to lovely people and do music leagues, which you just about,
I dipped out.
Andrea, you dipped out because you're on holidays. Yeah. That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
I did that because
we're
on holidays in a country that charges me, or where my phone provider charges me what can only be described as extortionate amount of money.
Best excuse I could imagine. Very good.
Yeah, that's it. So,
all right. Okay. But that's patreon.com/909 and talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.